the Ghost Goal Podcast.
The second week of the Premier League season finally provided us with a few interesting results, as both Chelsea and Manchester United failed to win their away trips to West Ham and Tottenham respectively, while Liverpool came close to a scare at home when they beat Bournemouth 3-1. But the league's juggernauts kept chugging right along as Manchester City knocked off Newcastle at home, Brighton handled lowly Wolves, and Arsenal got their business done, down a man against Crystal Palace on Monday night. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 419. Javier, I'm sure you're flying fresh off a 1-0 result.
Definitely not flying off of that one, Alex.
Absolutely flying.
Not flying.
You got pissed off,
annoyed.
You got screwed over by the refs.
Most bullshit red card I've ever seen in my life. I mean, just, and then it was like, yeah, we'll get to it, but it just, no, not happy, Alex, not happy at all, even though we're 2-0 and this, you know, everything's fine though. Everything's fine. We didn't drop any points. No panic, Alex, no panic.
Right. Why would you panic? You've won your first two games, even if one was closer than you would have liked.
Now, if you're a Chelsea fan, though, Alex.
Oh, we're going to get to them. But we do have to start at, you know, one of the two big results from the big games on Saturday evening. I think the Tottenham 2-0 win against Manchester United deserves our attention first, because I feel like there was definitely more action in that game than there was in the Manchester City-Newcastle game. But what did you make of it? The first win under the new boss, Ange Postecoglou, against Manchester United.
I hate it, Alex.
You're not a fan?
I fucking hate it. No.
What a shocker.
No, that's not why I hate it, Alex. I hate it because it kind of looked good. It kind of looked good from Tottenham. Yeah, it was the first half was definitely a little bit nervy, and United had quite a few chances. I think United deserved to be up 1-0 with the Bruno Fernandes chance. They should have had a penalty in the first half. They also hit the woodwork. You know, there was a lot of...
So did Tottenham, to be fair.
So did Tottenham, yes. So it was, you know, it was a back-and-forth game. Lots of chances, both teams, you know. But United should have been up probably a couple goals in the first half. But the way that Tottenham played in the second half was not like I've seen a Tottenham team play before, which was when they went up 1-0, they didn't really sit back and try to defend like Antonio Conte or Mourinho or even Pochettino teams sometimes do. Pochettino less so, but the other two, you know, they go up 1-0 and then, you know, he'd bring on a defender or they'd try to play a little bit more possession. No, like this Tottenham team was still taking risks, going up the field, attacking, and United were getting, you know, they were getting countering sequences of play, but they weren't really doing anything with the ball or losing the ball cheaply. But I thought Tottenham were, definitely good for the second goal. Could have had a third or a fourth. You know, there was a darting run that Son had in the box where he dribbled like three players, and it was a really nice sequence of play from Tottenham. I thought Madison was everywhere. I thought he was really good. He's definitely been a big addition to the team. Almost all the play seems to go through Madison, and yeah, he's doing well in that team. Pape Sarr, I know that goal was a little bit jammy, but you know, the run he made to get to that goal took a lot of athleticism, and he was extremely quick and fox in the box, and he's looked good offensively so far in Tottenham's two games. So yeah, props to Postecoglou for switching the mentality there so quickly in terms of like just wanting to attack and play like attractive football, which you just haven't seen Tottenham do in years and years and years. Like honestly, since Pochettino, since, you know, when they had that run to get to the Champions League final, they were playing good stuff. You know, they were people like to watch them. Ever since Pochettino left, basically, they've been kind of dreary and just, you know, kind of anti-football and just fouling, and they weren't like that. It was, again, hate to say it, but it was kind of like a breath of fresh air to not see Tottenham be the way that they've been, you know, in the past. And Postecoglou's post-match interview, I was, you know, just he seems like a very level-headed guy. He has a plan. He has a style of play that he is very brash about and talks to the media about how he wants to be attacking and he wants his players to play. And if they lose playing that style, he's fine with it. You know, he's not going to be mad at his players. He just wants them to play how he wants, you know, this attacking style. And it's fun to watch. So definitely a lot of positives from the Tottenham side after losing Harry Kane. And I think they, you know, one more player I wanted to point out actually that I was really impressed with was Vicario, the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
He was fantastic, made some great saves, but, you know, very good with distribution on his feet, you know, seemed to command his area very well with crosses, you know, was directing the back line. Just, again, impressive to get a clean sheet against Manchester United. Not an easy feat with the attacking players they had. Do you have anything else to add, Alex?
Well, I was going to say, I'll let you, you seem like you've summed up the Tottenham side of things pretty well. I'll handle the Manchester United side of things. I think we were all pretty surprised to see United trot out that same exact, you know, lineup and formation from the Wolves game, the first
with
week
Rashford
of the season.
With Rashford up top, yeah.
With Rashford playing centrally, Garnacho out on the left wing, and then the same Mount, Bruno, Casemiro midfield as the previous week. Now, you know, there were differences in approach in that Mason Mount was played a little bit deeper alongside Casemiro, and it seemed to work pretty well in the first half. But it all kind of like fell apart in the second as United, you know, the game was 0-0. United had like pretty good spells for a lot of the first half. And it kind of left them exposed when Tottenham like made the shift to playing through Madison more in the second half. Like Mount started to push up a little bit more to, you know, provide another option for United going forward. And it just feels like they haven't gotten the balance right like for that yet. Or it may end up not end up being the system that they go forward with, which, you know, presents a lot of questions if they do end up signing another midfielder like Amrabat or someone like that. Is it Mason Mount who they spent $65 million to sign that would, you know, see the bench or not play in midfield at all if that ends up happening? Something's gotta give because these first two games in the league have not been good performances.
Alex,
and
what about
been
Bruno?
Result.
Is the captain's armband just like a curse at United? You know, because like soon as he got the captain's armband, he's become shit. So like,
I don't think Bruno was very good even in last season as well. Like he's had better goal scoring seasons than he did last year, and you know a lot of people were blaming like Ronaldo being around for a lot of that, but Ronaldo wasn't there for the vast majority of last season. Like, Ten Hag handled that pretty early on, and, you know, still Bruno Fernandes hasn't really figured out how to reach his highest potential again in this, you know, this new system. So, you know, part of the blame goes on him, but a lot of it goes on Ten Hag as well. And I think another easy fix that they're just waiting on Hoyland to return to make is getting Rashford back out onto that left wing. He's said himself in interviews that, I think the Gary Neville interview he did with the overlap, he said that, you know, his best position is on the left wing. He did come up as a striker, so in a pinch he can play there, but he just has looked so out of sorts and so uninterested playing as a center forward in these last two games that I'm sure they can't wait for Hoyland to get healthy and, you know, start giving them a more traditional center forward option in that central area.
Yeah, I mean, Ten Hag talked about it.
Of.
He said, you know, we need a striker. You know, we don't have a natural finisher in the team right now. And he, you know, talked in his press conference that he thought they had really good actions in the first half. He kept saying that word actions, you know, and switches. And he said that he really liked the way his team played in the first half, but they just didn't have a finisher. So, yeah, I think Hoyland will, as soon as he's fit, probably come into the side and they'll, you know, maybe they'll look a lot better with him. So who knows? But for United right now, it is kind of a little bit up in the air of how their form is going to be. And, you know, they might suffer the early part of the season until it can figure it out, because it doesn't look like they figured it out right now.
Well, they've got Nottingham Forest at home next weekend, so you think they probably should be able to bounce back. But Forest at home, not an easy one either. Let's move on to Manchester City getting a 1-0 win against Newcastle. The late game on Saturday, City had to play in the Super Cup, UEFA Super Cup final last year. So they lobbied to the Premier League to get their game pushed back from the like Saturday 10 a.m. time slot it was originally scheduled for to sometime on Sunday or Monday. And the Premier League said, okay, let's come to an agreement here. You get what you want. We get what we want. Your game's going to be played 3 p.m. or 8 p.m. in England on Saturday, which gave them a couple extra hours after traveling to Athens for that Super Cup to prepare for this game. And in true City fashion, in the machines they are, they went out there and just very professionally took apart Newcastle, had a couple scares on the way, but Alvarez's goal in the first half ended up being the difference. And these are the kind of games that I think people don't appreciate Manchester City enough for. You know, they're fresh off that trip I just mentioned in the middle of the previous week, while Newcastle get the full week to prepare. They're fresh off a Kevin De Bruyne injury, finding out that he's going to be out for about 4 months, I think was the quoted time. And it didn't matter at all. They still just looked the far better team against Newcastle.
Foden was so good.
Got the win.
He was just unbelievable. I mean, he put Haaland in, what, 3-4 times, and Haaland missed some close chances, and the game could have easily been 3-4-0 for Manchester City if Haaland had finished his chances. But yeah, I think it was an impressive 1-0 win. Like it was like a very dominant 1-0 win, and they really stifled Newcastle. I think that's where this new Manchester City side, we talked about it in preseason and we're already seeing it now. It's just insanely hard to play against them, not just because of the amount of time that they keep the ball, but because they're really good defensively now. So they stifle whatever you have going offensively, whatever your game plan is, and they pressure you a lot on the ball. So it's incredibly hard to play against them. Every single time that you play against Manchester City, it's just the hardest game on the fixture list for the whole season. And, you know, every team is going to be dreading playing this team every week in and week out, because Newcastle were pretty good. I mean, they like tried to get their game plan going, at least at the back. They were able to keep the ball a little bit, but as soon as they tried to advance the ball down the field, City would just kind of wipe out the attack and nothing would happen. So it's just a strong defensive Manchester City is almost impossible to beat.
Yeah, and we saw them pretty much shift back to the old style, like four at the back, that they got away from for, you know, the end run of last season. And they've gotten away from that you know, 3-2-4-1 formation that they were playing last season, out of necessity because Stones has been injured. But it also seems to fit like the current crop of players that are healthy and available, because the back four was Walker at right back, Diaz and Akanji as the center backs, and then Josko Gvardiol, the new signing from RB Leipzig, playing at left back. And then a midfield two at the base of midfield of Rodri and Kovacic, and then just Foden, Alvarez, Grealish, and Haaland as the front four, you know, taking care of that side of things. And Rodri and Kovacic especially, I keep saying it over and over again, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but Kovacic in a midfield, in a Pep Guardiola midfield, playing next to Rodri, it's just not fair. And you saw it in that initial ball through the midfield line and Newcastle's defensive line that played in Foden for City's goal. Foden then cut it back and Alvarez finished excellently, but that one moment of like genius from Kovacic just opens up the whole Newcastle defense, and then, you know, Foden and Alvarez take care of the rest. But you're going to be seeing a lot of that from Kovacic this season. You're going to see a lot of moments where he's, you know, not really doing anything for big parts of the game, and just sort of keeping possession ticking over and preventing the opposition from having the ball. And then all of a sudden he's going to like open up the defense with one pass like that, or he's going to beat two players off the dribble, draw another one to himself, and it will leave one of his teammates in acres of space. That's the genius of Mateo Kovacic. He just makes things happen just through pure talent alone. And he always has a really good idea of when to pick his moment to do so. So it's impressive to me that it was, I know it's 1-0, you don't want to like hype it up too much, but this was a Newcastle team that looked like one of the best teams in the league based off of the first game performance alone. And City made them look ordinary. You know, that midfield that everyone's, you know, trying to say is one of the best midfields in the league now, in Tonali, Guimaraes, and Joe Ellington, they all end with yellow cards from trying to, you know, stop counterattacks at certain points and the result from being even worse. And I'm sure they'll get there and they'll improve. But in this game, in the second game of the season, they weren't anywhere close to Manchester City's midfield two of Rodri and Kovacic. So that's something to keep an eye on going forward, because like, as Stones comes back, does Kovacic come out of the team? Like, how does Pep react, or does he keep this team in the back four that I mentioned and keep that Kovacic and Rodri midfield two together? It's going to be interesting to see. Did you have anything you want to say about Newcastle specifically? I didn't have anything more for them. I just kind of feel like they
I thought they did okay for this game. I mean, they didn't let the game get out of hand, and they were always in it till the end. So I think that's all you can really ask against Manchester City, is that you don't get blown out and that you stay in with the chance of a result. And, you know, if maybe one or two things had gone their way, they might have gotten a draw in here. So, no, I don't, you know, nothing bad to take away from Newcastle. I think they're showing that they're still, you know, an elite team, and they're going to be in it for top four till the end of the season.
All right, Javier, now's the time. Let's talk about Arsenal going to Crystal Palace, getting the 1-0 win earlier today on Monday.
A Martin Odegaard penalty. Too much to say about it, to be honest.
Nothing at all?
No, I mean, I do. Okay,
you usually have your own spiel that you like to give about how you feel about it.
Sure. I mean, it was kind of routine, to be honest with you, until the red card. The game felt like it was going to easily go our way. Crystal Palace didn't really have too much threat on the ball at all. I mean, it was really just Jordan Ayew was annoying the shit out of our back line and pulling fouls all across the pitch, and they were getting hoofing balls into the box. But we have such a big team now. It doesn't feel like, you know, when we had Tomiyasu in there, Saliba, Ben White, Kai Havertz, you know, even Odegaard and Saka aren't, you know, tiny players. So we have a pretty tall team in there that can get in there with the best of them now. And it doesn't feel like teams like Crystal Palace can just, you know, outmuscle us. Or it was impressive to see how good we were defensively, even after we went down to 10 men, you know, because Palace really just had no chances. So it was good to see that. You know, I think my prediction of us being one of the better teams defensively in the league, I think it's going to stand. But, you know, injuries like the Urien Timber one is probably going to make us suffer a little bit. Tomiyasu now having a red card. Not worried about it because Zinchenko came on the pitch. There was a period of maybe 15 minutes where Crystal Palace had us pinned back. And then Jorginho, Zinchenko, and Kiwior all came on, and we just controlled the ball for the rest of the game. And it was awesome because I've totally missed having Zinchenko in the squad. And even Jorginho, he was, you know, pinging balls around and keeping the ball for us. So happy that we have players off the bench that can affect the game and close out games when we need it like that. And we need these nitty gritty 1-0s if we're gonna go in for a league title this year. We're going to have to win games like this where the, you know, in Arsenals of the past, we've always seen it. You know, we up 1-0, red card happens, end up losing 3-1, or, you know, drawing 2-2 or something like that, you know, but it never would end up with us winning the game like this. So when things didn't go our way, we still got the result, and that's what you need from a team to build mentality and to build belief throughout the team. So that's all we need. And for Palace, honestly, I don't think they're going to get relegated with the way that they played against us. And I know that they didn't play as well against Sheffield, but that, you know, Elise wasn't even in this team, and I think that they have to find a way of scoring goals. I think that's still a problem. And maybe if they sign a striker, they're going to be, you know, comfortably in, like, you know, 12th, 13th. I still think they could be in trouble. But now I've seen that there's just so many worse teams than Crystal Palace that there's probably other teams in the league that are going to get relegated before Palace do.
Right. And what we should probably, like, revisit our predictions around the time that we do the, like, transfer window grades when the transfer window finishes,
because, yeah, things have already changed significantly for other teams as well. Like, yeah. West Ham, for example.
I mean, even Burnley, who've made the couple of signings that I asked them to. Bournemouth as well. Yeah, there's tons of teams that, you know, are either closer to the relegation zone or have gotten themselves in with a better chance of staying away from it with the transfers that they've made since our preview pods. So we'll revisit that for sure when it's appropriate. Let's move on to the one I would rather avoid, but, you know, you can't really, because it's kind of the, would you even call it an upset at this point, Javier? West Ham beating Chelsea 3-1.
Well, it has to be, Alex. You've gone on and broken the transfer fee record in a window, $456 million spent. The previous record was held by Real Madrid.
Yeah, everyone now, really Chelsea loves have to that bring up the amount spent. Record. Now, everyone likes to bring out the amount spent. No one likes to ever mention the.
You played against West Ham, the net spend,
Javier. You know, all right, what about, you were playing West Ham, Alex.
So, I mean, we're not talking about a team that's gone and spent hundreds of millions. You know, they've gone out and signed, you know, one player, James Ward-Prowse, for like, you know, $40 million, and then Edson Alvarez now for $30 million or $25 million. So, yeah, they've spent a little money.
Ward-Prowse was $30 million, and Edson Alvarez was like $40 million, something like that. So they've almost spent the Declan Rice money. But yeah, it turns out they spent it well, because Ward-Prowse, I think he had two assists in this game. The assist on the corner for the first goal, Aguero's goal, 7 minutes in. And then the through ball to Antonio, who made it 2-1 in the 53rd
minute. I'm not
going to
lie, it was pretty cool when the first corner that Ward-Prowse had in like the second minute, the whole stadium just started like got up on their feet and were like clapping, because they were just like, ah, Ward-Prowse on a corner. This is going to be amazing. And he whipped in just like a lovely ball. Then like all these giant West Ham players came crashing in. They almost scored off that first corner, and then they literally scored off the second one. So it's definitely going to be a big weapon for West Ham this season, and it's going to catch teams. I mean, Ward-Prowse is, I think, a huge signing for West Ham, and definitely changes the way that I think they're going to go up in the table from where they were last season. They're a team that I think now are going to do better and probably finish in the top, you know, maybe 10th, 11th, maybe even higher. So, but I thought they were impressive on the day, but more so than West Ham being impressive, I thought Chelsea just kind of did themselves in themselves, because you know, you guys did well to get back into the game. I thought Chelsea played well at the end of the second half, especially after the Chukwuemeka goal. He started controlling possession, pushing West Ham back. And then I don't know why in the second half it just didn't feel like you had that same energy. But the defensive mistakes have been there already in the past. And there's a lot of new players there. Desassi, we were praising him, you know, last week, saying he did really well, but he was another one who I thought his performance decreased a lot. But you got to say the turning point of the game was the Enzo Fernandez penalty, because at the end of the second half, you know, you go from down 1-0, it's 1-1, and then in the 42nd minute, clear penalty, Raheem Sterling, who I thought was your best player, by the way, on the day, he was, you know, the only player who consistently kept the ball well, dribbled by a couple of players, you know, made good decisions, didn't really lose the ball or take, you know, bad shots. He was consistently, I think, your best performer, which is surprising to say. But yeah, you guys just kind of collapsed after that penalty. It really took the air out of you. I thought Enzo Fernandez started making bad decisions, started losing the ball. And then, you know, West Ham went down to 10 men. And I thought this is the second half, you know, after they've gone up 2-1. I thought, okay, you know, Chelsea have a good 35 minutes, because let's be honest here, now extra time is always at least 6 or 7 minutes, you know. So I thought you guys had a good amount of time to go at them with down 2-1, and
that's the most concerning
thing.
You
didn't really create very much. Yeah, you really didn't create much. You brought on all these players off the bench, and I thought, okay, great, Madueke's on, Caicedo's on, you know. So yeah, Alex, that is concerning. You know, so, go ahead. I was confused.
It's the main concern that, you know, we went down early in the second half from that Disasi mistake, giving the ball away and then, you know, letting the ball go through his legs on Antonio's shot. Then Aguero gets himself sent off for a second yellow card. And yes, we kept possession and pinned West Ham back into their own box for the remainder of the game, but it didn't feel like any chance of real note was created. Yes, Raheem Sterling continued to attack like Emerson, that right side, their left side, Chelsea's right side, and was able to get to the byline and cut back plenty of times. But it didn't really feel like we were able to effectively create too many great chances from those cutback opportunities. And you have to credit West Ham like a lot for that. But there's also plenty of players you should be looking at, like Mykhailo Mudryk, just skying that volley at the back post that he got. And even partially Nico Jackson a little bit, who looked good in the first half, but once the space got just like evaporated in the second half, he had no chances that second half.
No, and I thought his touch a lot of times was just, he puts the ball a little bit too far in front of him and trusts his pace and his, you know, skill. But in the Premier League, you know, these players have been playing against the best teams in the world for years, and it feels like he's not used to that yet, of that intensity, how quickly, how little time you have to make a decision. In Spain, you're just allowed so much more time on the ball. You know, anytime you watch a game in La Liga, you can see how much more time the players are afforded. Someone like Nico Jackson can, you know, destroy you if he's got time to run at you and think of what his next move is. If he's only got half a second before you're on him, it's definitely been concerning to me that he hasn't looked nearly as good with you know, less decision making time on the ball. As have a lot of these new Chelsea players, you know, from other leagues. It's, I think people who thought that this was just going to instantly be, you know, good, and after that Liverpool performance, I think that was, you know, a mixture of a lot of things. But, you know, being at home, I think Chelsea are going to get results this season. But I think away from home, it's going to be really, really difficult, and you're going to see results like this happen.
Yeah, West Ham away, especially since they moved to the London Stadium, it hasn't been the happiest of hunting grounds for even like the best of Chelsea teams. Like we've lost the last couple of times.
Definitely been a bogey fixture for you guys. Yeah, a little
bit. Yeah, but and that can be said for, you know, Tottenham and Arsenal as well. When these, you know, big London rivals come, like, go to West Ham get themselves up for those games. And so what I'm trying to say is this one wasn't too surprising to me. I thought the way these first two games of the season were going to go, I thought we were going to lose to Liverpool on the first game of the season and then draw away at West Ham. It turns out we drew the Liverpool game and we lost at West Ham. So it's the same outcome that I anticipated.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world.
It just feels worse. Now we've got a run of games where we play Luton at home on Friday, Friday night at 3 p.m. That will only be Luton's second game in the league after they had to postpone their second official second game of the season against Burnley because they're having some construction done at their home stadium for the first like couple of weeks of the season, so they can't play any home games. So while they have had a week off, I don't think that really benefits them this early in the season or like holds Chelsea back. If anything, you would think Luton would want the experience of playing more so that they could get ready to play, you know, a team like Chelsea this Friday. That should be a game that we're absolutely targeting as a must win for obvious reasons. They're a promoted side. We're at home. We should be like winning that one easily. Even if we like don't win it easily and it's 1 or 2 nil and it's kind of, you know, stressful, we'll take that. We just need to get the first win of the Pochettino era under our belt. And then after that, we've got Forest at home and Bournemouth away. So we're going to have a lot of opportunities to get wins against teams we should beat. And now's the time to start like focusing more on the result than the performance. So I'm still upbeat. But yeah, that was a disappointing one. And I'm guessing because people are probably going to want us to mention it like somewhat, I'm not concerned at all about the Caicedo penalty that he gave away or the debut overall for that matter. You know, the guy's been like taking part in preseason training, but not playing actual preseason games too much. So he just looked rusty. He looked like he wasn't sharp. Lunged in for to try and win the ball back and get us one more chance to tie the game up, but gave away a penalty in the process. I don't think 3-1 was like an accurate representation of how that game went. 2-1 probably would have been more fair, but you got to take the risk to win the ball back to try and get the equalizer. So I appreciate Caicedo for at least, you know, putting himself out there to try and give us the opportunity, and he made himself look bad in the process, but that's okay. All right, what do we want to move on to next? I didn't really get a chance to watch too many other games from this weekend because I was kind of busy. But did you get to watch that Liverpool-Bournemouth game?
Yeah, I was able to get a good look at a lot of the games this weekend. I thought the Liverpool-Bournemouth game was very interesting in terms of especially the first 15 minutes because Bournemouth were able to press Liverpool hard. And, you know, they won the ball back several times in the first few minutes, got a goal from it. And then after, like, almost outworked Liverpool, but then it fell off. And as soon as that press fell off, Liverpool just blitzed them and scored a couple of goals. And as soon as they had scored a couple of goals, it kind of felt like Bournemouth laid off the pedal a little bit. And then Liverpool got the third and just killed the game off. They look good. Even after the McAllister red, they were able to shut the game down. Bournemouth did get a couple of chances, but you know, I think it's impressive that Liverpool were able to go up 3-1 even after the red card and, you know, not concede again, especially after they went down early, you know, 1-0 and the crowd kind of got shut up. So Liverpool is still very, very hard to beat at Anfield. Still going to be one of the hardest fixtures in the season. And all the attacking talent, you know, Jota just comes on and scores. They Luis Diaz, I mean, that scissor kick he had was unbelievable. Just flicks it up to himself and then scissor kicks it into the corner. You know, I think the only one who I'm kind of concerned about is Mohamed Salah, who missed the penalty and then, you know, got lucky to get the rebound and score. But, you know, had another kind of, not in a nightmare, but just not necessarily the player that we've seen in the past and kind of maybe does look to be slowing down a little bit. And
you say that, but possible. He scored it's and possible. He had a beautiful assist last week. Like,
no,
he's
I know,
still fine.
But it's possible. Of course, it's possible, though, that Klopp starts taking him off for all the attacking options that they have on the bench. And he starts only getting 75 minutes to, you know, 70 minutes a game instead of always being left the 90 minutes on the pitch.
That is true, to sort of like manage his, you know, game time as he, you know, he's on the other side of 30 now. So that would make sense. What do we make of this new signing they made, Wataru Endo, the Japanese center midfielder that they signed from Stuttgart? It's not Kefren Turam, Javier, but
no, it's
it is
not, Alex.
Another example of one of those players I mentioned, that there are deals to be had out there. And Endo seems like a very reasonable, like bargain-esque kind of signing for them. He's not a prospect. He's 30 years old. He's played for many years and over 111 games for Stuttgart in the Bundesliga. I don't mind it. And he only came on for like the last 30 minutes of this Bournemouth game, but it was the minutes that they needed him for after McAllister had been sent off.
Yeah, I was going to say, he definitely helped, you know, bring a calmness to the Liverpool midfield. And he's a workhorse. He's a player that'll never give up and brings that Japanese mentality that is very good in football. You know, work hard and you know, it's in the Japanese culture, and all the players usually who get to the top level end up having that similar trait of just unbelievable work rate and that never give up mentality, which can be infectious in the team. So I think it's a great signing for Liverpool, and I always love to see more Japanese players in the Premier League. Tomoyasu Mitoma.
Yeah,
Endo,
I was about to say.
I love it.
Yeah.
We got some.
Yeah,
great
they've only just started like breaking in. I feel like it started with Minamino at Liverpool a couple of years ago, and he didn't really like properly break in. But yeah, we're seeing more and more Japanese players in the Premier League.
We had
now.
Akuma Asano. You remember him?
No, not
back
really.
Back in the Wenger days, Takuma Asano. You don't remember him?
He was supposed to
be some Japanese prodigy kid. No,
yeah,
he never
played well for you guys.
No.
Oh, you know what? I'm forgetting. What's his name? The player from the attacking midfielder from
Nakamura
Dortmund.
Shinji Nakamura as well, obviously.
Well, he
played for Manchester United.
No, he played for Celtic. The one I'm thinking of is a different name.
Shinji Kagawa.
Kagawa, that's it. Yeah, that's the one.
Kagawa played. Yeah,
he is the godfather of Japanese Premier League players. But yeah, Liverpool get their first win of the season. They seem back to their winning ways. Any other games you want to give a shout out to? I feel like we have to mention Villa beating Everton 4-0.
Well, yeah,
after
Brighton
that.
Spanking Wolves again. What a goal by Mitoma. That was an unbelievable goal of the weekend for sure. Slice through five players and then finish like that. I mean, what ice cold in his veins. Also, you know, and Ciso, did you see that outside of the boot assist he had for Brighton's third? And then on the fourth goal, he like dribbled a couple players and put in another beautiful ball. Both of them were just tap-ins for Sully March because they were so fucking unreal. Some stupid talent on Brighton. Even after getting Caicedo poached and McAllister taken away, they're still trotting along.
They've played Luton and Wolves, two relegation favorites, and they've scored four on both of them. So they're getting business done so far, but I'm not gonna.
They've looked good though. They have.
I'm not saying they haven't looked good. I'm just saying they've gotten the business done that they should have. So we'll see how it progresses for them. We do have to mention Villa. They beat Everton 4-0. I know Everton are another team that look like they're in deep relegation trouble. But after the nightmare that was that first game of the season at Newcastle, losing Mings probably for the season, they really needed just like a solid.
This was more like the Villa
drubbing
that I was talking about, yeah. Alex. This was. I mean, it's wild. Right now, the Villa's goal difference is even after losing 5-1 in their first game. So, what Villa are we going to get? Is it going to be Jekyll and Hyde? You like that?
What was that?
Jekyll and Hyde.
Do you mean the famous novel Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? The people love you for Jacqueline Hyde, Javier. Don't be ashamed of it.
Jacqueline Hyde, baby. Let's go. But yeah, no, it's I think for Villa, it's going to be a typical Unai Emery where they might actually just focus on Europe and be maybe good at home in the league and then just be complete shit away from home and get spanked and then finish like 10th in the league, but sacrifice their position for Europe. We'll see what Unai does.
They're not always going to be playing Newcastle away in the Premier League. So, you know, that was just
That's fair, but they looked really, really good. I did want to say I loved the front three of Leon Bailey, Watkins, and Diaby. I thought that was just super fluid. And the midfield of Kamara, Luiz, and surprisingly McGinn. McGinn was excellent in that midfield as well as a workhorse. You know, he might be on the other side of 30, but he's still, you know, he's a leader in that team and plays well. But Luiz was awesome. I thought he bossed the midfield and looked really good against, you know, Everton, who don't have a bad midfield. And I thought that Everton, though, were very heavily done by when Calvert-Lewin, you know, had a concussion in like the 18th minute and then had to be taken off. His face looked awful. Got clattered into by Martinez and, elbowed in the face and then had to go off a few minutes later. So I think that kind of changed the game a lot for them. And then we got to mention Duran, Alex, the Jean Duran, the Colombian striker, came on, scored within like a minute. And Watkins was raging when he was taken off. He was like, "How dare you take me off?" And Duran comes on and scores immediately. And then Unai's just like, "Oh my God." So, yeah, no. Exciting times for Villa. You know, I think Duran was out for most of last season injured. So, they need him up and running and playing well this year.
Yeah, I think they signed him in January. And then he only really got to come on for like the last couple of minutes of some games. Because once he arrived, Ollie Watkins just turned into a goal-scoring like behemoth for the rest of that season. And, you know, now Ollie Watkins, he hasn't scored yet this season. So it kind of gives, you know, other players the opportunity like Duran to come on for the last like 15, 20 minutes and make their mark with the game already in hand. So they'll be happy that he's scoring once those Europa Conference League games pop up, because I'm sure he's going to feast on teams like that. But now it's time, Javier, to close this one out by introducing Javier's first ever personal segment. We haven't named it yet, but Javier, you want to talk about Fantasy Premier League, which again, the Fantasy Premier League.
I want to give some love to Fantasy because we've got a lot of players this year. Let me plug the Fantasy League for those
who maybe have Fantasy Premier League but haven't joined it yet. Go to fantasy.premierleague.com and look up the Ghost Goal Podcast Fan League. And we have a link at Ghost Goal Pod on Twitter and Instagram to automatically join the league. And you can kick both mine and Javier's ass in fantasy if you so choose.
Hey, I'm in second. So, yeah, you can kick Alex's ass. You can kick my ass. It's going to be hard to kick my ass. Generally, it's very hard. I'm usually below me. But
so, Javier, talk about the segment, what you're going to be doing with it, and then obviously give your picks for this week.
So I haven't fully developed what I wanted to do, Alex. I was thinking of maybe doing something where, we pick a few players and we decide of whether we should hold them or let go of them, because there are some good picks for the week, some players that are on form. I think there's some good budget players, and I was going to start there. I think if you want a budget defender right now, someone who's going to come into the team who has a good run of form, look at Malo Gusto. He's going to be $4 million. So that's a really, really cheap defender that you can fit into the team. He's got, you know, Luton, like Alex said, Sheffield coming up.
And Nottingham Forest at home and Bournemouth away.
I mean, yeah, there could be at least two clean sheets there and maybe some attacking returns. Him and Chilwell, I would look at both. Chilwell's 5.7, a lot more expensive option, but he's looked really good for Chelsea. He's been pretty much the main attacking outlet for Chelsea this season so far on the left, Raheem on the right. And, you know, so good. If you want to look at Chelsea at all, I would look at players like that. And then Nico Jackson, Alex, I think he's one where I have him in fantasy right now. I think he's one where if you have him in your team, hold him for one more week, see how he does against Luton. If he doesn't produce against Luton, get him the hell out of your team. But I think we got to hold him for one more week because we've had him for a couple of weeks and he hasn't produced yet. So don't let go of him too early. Then there's other players who have surprised this season who've started off really well. One, Alex, Yona Wissa. He's got 11 points and 9 points in his first two games. Been banging in goals, playing up top for Brentford, and you know, he is a player that comes off in like the 75th minute or so, you know, so he's been getting taken off. But he's only 6.1 mil. He's a striker. So if you want a cheap budget striker option, he's probably the best one to go. Him or Julian Alvarez. Julian Alvarez is 6.5 mil. And he's also started both Manchester City's games, gotten himself a goal and an assist, you know, beautiful goal in this, in the Newcastle game, huge goal. I assume he's going to be starting the next few games because of his form. So that's a couple of cheap strikers that you can look at. And then in terms of midfield, there's so much talent right now, so many players playing well. But I think the big one, everyone can see him, you know, Mbeumo's top of Mbeumo, you know, scored 16 points this game week, had the most points of the game week, and has looked really good for Brentford, takes penalties for them. He's in midfield, so that's a midfielder taking penalties. Highly recommend picking him up if you can bring him into your team. And then Sully March, he's now got 3 goals in his first 2 games for Brighton this season. And Sully March only had 6 goals last season. So 3 goals, I know it was Luton and Wolves, but still getting 3 goals in your first, you know, 2 games for Brighton is, you know, it's also impressive because he played 90 minutes in Wolves, and there's a lot of attacking players who come on even when you're, you know, up 4-0, but he seems to be a big favorite of De Serbi. So he played 73 minutes in the first game, 90 in the second. You know, he seems to be bang on for the starting lineup. So if you want another attacking Brighton option, I think stay away from their forwards, because João Pedro, Evan Ferguson, they're getting rotated a lot. You don't know who's going to start any game, but I would go with the Brighton midfielders as well. A lot of good options in fantasy right now, but there's some teams I would stay away from. Liverpool, not sure who to get there. That's until the one, Mohamed Salah. Yeah, I think that Mohamed Salah is pretty safe, but other than that, maybe Diaz. I know he scored a beautiful goal. He was going to say, you know, he's one to watch. But yeah, there's a lot of good teams right now that are producing attacking. Defensive wise, not too many. So I would look more for attacking returns right now and try to get more of those and get some good bargain buys in there from Brentford and Brighton.
Okay. Well, we'll figure out what to name your fantasy segment, Javier. And if any of you have any like fantasy questions, go ahead and tweet at Javier.
God, I just gave away
Javier.
All of my secrets. All of them. There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah, that's why I'm not doing the fantasy segment. Yeah, I'm too far behind to give anyone else some help. So it's got to be someone who, you know, has some secrets to give. But yeah, you can send your fantasy questions, if you have them, for Javier for his segment to Javier on Twitter or X, as I'm starting to hear people call it that more often now, at JavierRev9. You can send those too and see if you can get Javier to talk about a specific fantasy topic or decision. Let's close on that note, Javier. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Javier, thank you for jumping on, you know, late Monday night with me. Again, if you have fantasy questions or any Premier League or footballing questions in general to throw Javier's way, you can follow him and tweet at JavierRev9. You can do the same with me at ASMoss92 on Twitter and Instagram, or the podcast socials at Ghost Goal Pod. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave a rating and review. Those new ratings and reviews help new listeners to find the pod, and we always appreciate it when you guys can help us out in that way. Enjoy the Premier League games this weekend, everyone, and until next time, see you.